Hey, my name is Yvette Butcher. I am interviewing Miss Deborah Woods.
Yes.
Okay. Today's date is November 18th, 2011, and it is 10:25 a.m. Okay, Miss Deborah Woods.
Yes.
Now, I want to know how you want me to refer to you.
Please refer to me as Ebony.
Okay, Miss Ebony. We'll go with Miss Ebony.
Okay. Okay.
Now, where were you born?
I was born in Detroit, Michigan.
You were born, were you raised in Detroit, Michigan?
I was.
Michigan as well? Okay. When did you come, let's say, down south? Because I'm not sure you came directly to Atlanta.
Well, I came directly to Atlanta when I retired, and I moved to the south.
Moved to the south.
Yes.
Now, how long has that been?
That was in 2000.
2000. Okay.
Yes.
So you've been here about 11 years now.
Yes, I have.
Awesome. Now, do you like it here?
I love it here.
Okay. Well, tell me this. I want to talk a little bit about your childhood.
Okay.
Being raised in the North. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned a little earlier, we want to collect stories mm-hmm. about African Americans and their experience doing segregation.
Yeah.
And I know that you lived in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know, what was your experience? What did you know about segregation living in Detroit as a child?
Well, I was brought up in like a mixed neighborhood. It was a lot of Jewish people that were there. And there were Jewish and black people. So in my bringing up, I kind of thought that, you know, we were like kind of all of the same, so to speak.
Because yes.
In my home, there was never a mention of anything that had to do with black versus white. You know what I'm saying? My mother just and father just referred to everybody just as people, you know. And even though they had been brought up in the South,
oh.
which I found out later in years, you know,
okay.
that their childhood wasn't what I thought it was.
Wow.
You know, because they had gone through some things that my mother, especially being brought up in Florida, she said things that she wouldn't even mention to me that she had endured in life, being like run off the road trying to go to school. You know, as they're walking down the road to go to school, cars would try to run them off the road. Different things like that that they had experienced that I had never experienced. So my childhood, my bringing up was a bit different.
Exactly.
Until one day.
And what happened?
I had been going to school, you know, I think I was maybe kindergarten, first grade, somewhere in there. And I would walk down the street and there was this little girl, her name was Deborah, the same as mine.
Okay.
And she was a little white girl that, but I mean, to me, it was just one of my school friends.
Okay, so
she
was a friend.
She would come out and we would walk to school together and we'd walk home together and she would go to her house and I would go on down the street to my house. We stayed on the same block. So this particular day, we were coming down the street and I happened to walk up on her porch with her. And she stated to me, "I can't let you in." And I said, "Why?" She says, "'Cause you're a nigga."
Wow.
And I was really floored because in my home, nigga was a word that was a bad word and a word you didn't use.
Yes.
So I felt like, why did she call me that? You know, so I went home in tears.
Yes.
And I told my mom what had happened and she explained to me and I said, she called me a nigga. I'm not a nigga, because I thought that was something bad.
Yes.
Which it is, you know what I'm saying? But that was a label that white folks had put on us.
Exactly.
You know, so, you know what I'm saying? Of course, in my head, that was bad. So when my mom explained it to me, I understood that I wasn't a nigga.
First and foremost. Yes.
But I never walked with her again to school.
Of course not. Mm-mm. Of course Mm-mm. not. So would you say that stands out as your first experience with racism then?
Yes. Now, at the time, me being a child, I'm not understanding. I just know that this is what she presented to me. But as I got older, I understood that that had to come from someone in her home that had brought that to her. because the interaction that she and I had were fine. It was nothing that was ever said until I got ready to step foot in that house.
Exactly.
Then all of a sudden,
put the brakes on.
Yeah. Okay, let up in here.
Right.
It's fine on the other side of this door, but don't bring
but
her
But do not bring her home.
Right.
And you were first, second grade at this point.
Yes, exactly. And so that was like a little, you know, much to swallow at that point.
At that age.
Yeah, because I had been brought up. I mean, I'm in a school that there's just as many blacks as it was white. So I'm not knowing that it's so much of a difference. You know, I mean, I knew that I was darker than them,
yes.
But, you know, I was a different race than them. I understood that, but it didn't get to the point of them being better than me or something
yes.
like that because they were white.
Right,
black.
We're equal footing.
Exactly.
And you're a little girl,
I'm a little girl,
and that's it.
And we just on our way to school. Right.
And we're friends.
Right, because it would have not been an issue for her to walk into my home.
Exactly, and that
and
was
see,
the difference.
That's what I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand why is it I can't come into your home, why I've got to be labeled as something ugly, but you can come into my home.
But you can come into my home. When your mother mm-hmm. explained that mm-hmm. and said, first of all, you're not a nigga.
Right.
You know, don't. I'm not going to allow you to internalize that.
Right, exactly.
But did she mention segregation? Did she talk about the bigger picture, or how did she explain that situation to you?
She just explained to me that nigga is a word that white people had put on us to try to make us feel bad.
Okay.
And that it wasn't real. There's nothing wrong with you. You're my beautiful baby.
Yes.
And everything is fine. And don't worry about that. That's just something that they do and that they call us. But you're not that.
But you're not that.
And you hold your
head high. Awesome.
So that was what it was.
So that and
so I took what my mother said and I kept marching
and kept
with
going
it.
And forward.
Marched right on past her house in the morning.
Go right to school.
I'm like, I'm not dealing with her anymore.
Yes.
And that was the end of that.
And that was the end of it.
And I never held it, because I guess it's just the way I was brought up. I never kind of held that in my heart. Like, if I saw her, I would speak to her, but it was just a different type of relationship from then on. I didn't want to walk to school with her, because if you think I'm a nigga, that means you think I'm something bad.
I don't need to be dealing with you.
And I went on to school, and it was just like,
it was dismissed.
It was just kind of dismissed. So it just.
Okay, so when did you mm-hmm. begin to realize segregation?
When we were on a trip, my mother and myself and my little brother, and I think a friend of hers was with us, and we were driving from Detroit down, because my mother's home is in Florida.
What
in
part?
Century, Florida, which is right outside. You can walk from my grandmother's house into Mobile, Alabama. She's right there on the, in fact, her address was Box 289, Route 1. So
okay.
Route 1 is the first thing that's right there where you can walk right over into Mobile.
Okay.
So in fact, now the streets down there are named after my grandmother.
Goodness. Hello.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Hattie Boulevard and Howard Street. Her name was Hattie Howard.
Hattie Howard.
Yes. So when we were going down there to visit my grandmother, we had stopped in Bowling Green, Kentucky, I think it was.
Yes.
And I remember us going into the restaurant to eat. And I remember that everybody in the restaurant was white, and they all stopped eating when we came in, and everybody turned around and looked at us. And I remember the person telling my mom, you can't eat in here, but if you come around the back, we might be able to find a place for you back in the kitchen.
Wow.
That was my first time of ever really having it slammed right dead into
exactly.
my face.
Exactly.
And I remember my mother holding her head high and says, no, thank you. And we walked out and got in the car and drove away.
Wow.
Because she says, no way in the world she's going to take us somewhere we can't sit down and eat where everyone else eats. We had always, this is the way we were, I was brought up.
Yes.
I walked in a restaurant and I sat down and I ate where everybody else
where
ate.
Everybody
I didn't know anything about
ate.
Going around to a back door and sitting in a kitchen somewhere to eat. I mean, what was that? Where do they do that?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So that was really kind of new to me, and it was really kind of, I couldn't understand that. Like, who are they?
Yes.
To say we can't sit down with them. And right. Why are they looking at us like that?
Now, how old were you?
I think I was about 10 years old.
10 years old?
Yeah.
Mm. How did your mother... Because I know that at 10 years old, you had a lot of questions. Because you were, like you said, it was a reality that just
right.
got slammed in your
right.
face. And you're 10.
Right.
So how did she explain
she
that?
She just said, we're not going in anybody's back to have to eat. We sit down in the front with everyone else. We'll just find somewhere else to eat. And that was the end of that. We got in the car and left. And it never was even mentioned again.
It was
never mentioned again there. It always just stuck in my head. Mm-hmm. But it was never mentioned. And we never talked about it. Because after I got grown and my mother and I had conversations, then I understood a lot of why some things weren't discussed because of the ugliness she had went through in her
upbringing as a child.
Yes, yes. So
it okay.
Yeah,
I understand that.
Yeah, because she said she just didn't want me to know about those things because there was so much that they had endured, you know, and just from working out in cotton fields and being run off the street, trying to, you know, off the road, trying to go to school, and
yes.
and people spit, white people spitting in their face and things like that, that, you know, she just didn't want me to have to worry about.
She didn't want you to
yeah.
have to worry
so
about
she didn't,
it.
So we didn't have those discussions till I was grown and she thought I was strong.
Yes, that you could handle this now.
Yeah, yeah, so...
Well, I wonder, mm-hmm. and I guess my next question is, when you were visiting your grandmother, mm-hmm. what was that experience?
Well, when I was visiting my grandmother, it was fine because I didn't really go anywhere except to other relatives' homes. So everything was, you know, it was accepted. You know what I'm saying? It was, and another thing I guess I couldn't really understand, too, in my child coming up, because there were white people in my family, so I couldn't understand why these other white people are treating us like this. You know, I had family that was
yes.
You know, I'm like, I'm not understanding any of this. It just didn't make sense to
it
me.
It was so. Confusing.
Very much so. Very much so.
Did you ever? Question now, your mom was more or less like protecting, and,
right?
You know,
exactly.
She was censoring. I'm not gonna
yeah,
tell
I'm
her this, I'm not gonna talk about
yeah,
this,
she's not gonna have to deal with this.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying? I'm bringing her right here, so she's not gonna have to deal with this. So, we're not gonna talk about that because I don't wanna even put that
I don't wanna put it in her head.
Right, exactly.
So, was there anybody, even maybe not an adult, but maybe an older cousin, mm-hmm. That you were able to say, I don't understand this. Did anybody try to explain the situation to you?
No, nobody really tried to explain it because I don't really think I kind of questioned it.
Yes.
I remember, excuse me, one time when I was in elementary school, my friend in elementary school, her mom was our teacher, and I know you might have heard of Pearl Clegg, the author Pearl Clegg.
Okay.
She just finished doing Flying West here with Ballet Ethnic. In fact, our dance company started
oh, really?
with Ballet Ethnic. But her mom, Mrs. Clegg,
yes.
was our teacher, and I had never seen. I didn't know if she was white or black.
Because the mother?
Her mother. Our teacher.
Or your teacher. Okay.
Because she was very, very, very fair. And she had kind of sandy blonde hair.
Straight hair or?
It was kind of straight, but It was kind of a sandy brown
yes.
color. And I remember one day walking up to her and asking her, Miss Clegg, are you white or black?
Wow.
And I probably said white or colored at that particular age in my life, because I was in elementary school, because I didn't know.
You didn't know.
I didn't know. And I remember she looked at me and she said, baby, I'm just colored just like you. My mom and dad are colored just like yours. You know what I'm saying? Now,
yes.
mind you, Pearl and I were in the class together. Pearl's father,
yes.
Reverend Albert Clegg, is the one that started Shrine of the Black Madonna. So just a little.
Just more.
So
wow.
In fact, when on the days when they had the Jewish holidays,
yes,
they'd always have to find something for Pearl and I to do, because all the rest of the kids would be gone. Well,
exactly, they were doing
it. Would just be her and I sitting up in the class. We sit up in the school to my, what are we going to do today?
What are we going to do?
So when we did Flying West with Ballethnic,
yes.
I got a chance to meet her husband, because she's moved here too. I mean, she's been here in Atlanta for years too.
Awesome.
So, yeah, because in fact, she went to Spelman.
Woo!
Yes. So when she was introducing me to her husband, and she said, you remember Deborah Woods? I told her, she said, oh my God, I'm so glad I met you. He said, all I heard about was you guys had to be in class by yourself
yes.
on the Jewish holidays. Because there was no one there. It was just very few kids, you know, a couple of kids here, a couple of kids there, you know what I'm saying? Because
yes.
most of the class, like I'm saying, we were Jewish.
You were in a mixed neighborhood, a
yes.
mixed school, and it was,
yes.
so it was predominantly Jewish.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's why I'm saying it's like, but I had been around white people all my life.
Yes.
And so I'm not understanding. So when I got ready to go in the little girl's house and she says, I'm a nigger, and I'm like, okay, well, that means that you've been smiling in my face all the time and y'all didn't really like me.
And you don't like me.
You don't even like me. So why am I even playing with you?
Never again. I don't want to play with you. So you were up in Detroit,
mm-hmm.
living your life, basically removed from what was happening in the South.
Exactly.
But the civil rights movement.
Yes.
Now tell me about that.
Now that's what opened up my eyes to a whole lot of stuff that I had never engaged or even thought about.
Mm.
Because when I saw and realized, you mean to tell me they can't go to college wherever they want to go? They can't go to school where they want to go? What? Why? So then it was like, which they got white holes on them. What? They
yes.
got dogs on them. What? Oh, man, I was like furious, because I'm not understanding what the heck is going on. So that kind of opened up. And that was during the same time, around that time when I became Ebony, because it was like black power.
Yeah.
Okay. Angela Davis.
Yes, Angela
Black
Davis.
Panthers.
Yes.
Hey, listen, we got to do this.
We have
thing
got
because
to fight.
We have to make ourselves. No, we can't. We can't let them run over us like this. We got to. We got to take back what's ours, because they came and took from us.
Yes.
When I really found out what was going on, I didn't know this coming up, because when I was in school coming up, we weren't made aware of Black history, Afro American history. I didn't know how much our people had put into this country, to making America what it is. You know, and then you tell me, go back home. I'm home.
Yes.
Home. Go back home. I'm home.
This is home.
I'm home right now, right here. So, yeah, it was a real awakening when the civil rights thing came around, because I'm looking at Martin Luther King, I'm looking at President Kennedy.
Yes.
All of these things are happening, and it's like, okay, we need to be fighting. We need to be doing something, because they shouldn't be living like this.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, and then first it was like, I don't want to go up to the South anymore. Because I hadn't experienced that coming down as a child with my grandmother, only on the way with that bowling green in Kentucky.
Yes, the one incident.
The one incident. That was just one. So we're talking about a whole lifetime of just one incident. I'm not really relating this. But then when I got old enough and I thought, you know, was aware of the civil rights and what was really going on in the South and how they were, doing the people, hanging people, and you know, and Tillman. I'm just so many things happening at the time. Then that made me aware of really what's going on. So
it opened your eyes.
It opened my eyes to a lot of stuff that I probably didn't know, and maybe not wanted to know. But after it was made, it was there. Hey, this
is. You had no other choice.
Right. You had to take it and digest it.
You had to.
Because it was right there in your face.
Now, how old were you? I'm looking for an age. I'm trying to relate because you said coming up and you got. So, how old were you when you began to realize all these things and get into that Black Power movement?
When I was really made aware of it, a lot of things, I think. When Kennedy got assassinated, because I remember coming home from school, so I was in high school.
High school.
I was in high school, and I remember coming home from high school, and I remember everybody. I know I was upset and crying because it was like, this is a president we had that stood up for us.
Yes.
That was giving the Black people something that they hadn't had before. So when he got assassinated, it was like, oh, you know, like you let the air out of a balloon.
Yes, deflated.
Yeah, it was like,
yes.
You know, so that was when I was like becoming more aware of really what was going on in the world. Because the world around me, because at first my world was like
very
this.
Tiny.
But then after that, my world grew bigger because I wanted to find out what was going on, what's happening, why did they kill our president? So that made me aware of a lot of things that, you know,
that I had
as a child, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You don't carefree, you know what I'm saying? You don't think of things.
You didn't.
Now, I really didn't get into my sure enough Black Power movement until I was like first 20s.
Okay.
That's when I really got into, you know, the Eldridge Cleaver and Angela Davis and, you know, Black Panthers and stuff like that. So that's when I really became aware
of
that. Yeah, and that's when I, and you know, another thing too though, I remember back when coming up, I remember, no, this might have been after I was grown because I was still back with my mom. She used to be so afraid for Reverend Sharpton.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I remember her telling me, that man must be crazy, because it was a thing of the way she was brought up.
Yes.
She knew that the white people weren't doing them right, but they couldn't open their mouth to say it.
Yes.
So here you have this man and these people, and you got Martin Luther King, and you got Sharpton, and you got these people that are Kennedy, all these that are opening their mouth in regards to this, and she was just so afraid for them. So she used to always, to ways that she used to have to deal with that, don't listen to them. She would tell me, don't listen to them. They're crazy. Don't listen to them, because she didn't want me to be rebellious against what was happening for fear that it might cause something to happen to me. It wasn't that she was defending what was going on.
Exactly.
She was just trying to protect me.
As she always had.
As she always had from.
Yes. That
so
was that mother.
That was just her.
Yes.
That was just her. Yeah, but that was a real eye-opening experience when all these things are coming at different times and from different places, and just, you know, it was like, whoa. Like I had been brought into a whole new world. And then when I started college, and then I took first class I took was Afro-American history.
Yes.
Because I wanted to learn about us.
Yes.
And I opened up the book, and I'm like, what in the world? We did what?
Yeah.
We did this? We did that. I mean, and it makes me cry now to think of how they had just
omitted that, erased or tried to erase it.
But so many years, just
yes,
their foot on us. It's just unbelievable.
It's absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah,
it is absolutely unbelievable.
And I'm like, when I found out all of the things that Black folks have done, and this world wouldn't even be what it is if it wasn't for us.
If it was not.
And they sit there and they act like they're the ones that did all of this. Like we're supposed to be indebted to them. Girl, please.
Still today.
To this day.
To this day. It's a reality.
Yeah, but see, now you look, so they've got so much technology that you can't keep things hidden anymore. So when you turn on your TV or you go on your computer or on the internet or whatever, and you see we are in every feel there is.
Yes.
You used to see the stock market running across. All you saw was them. Now yes. You see the stock market run across.
Yes.
On Bloomberg. What do you see? Us.
Yes.
See. When you used to see them out there on the golf course, nothing but them.
That's
now,
right.
You see just as many of us out there as you do them.
That's right.
We're in every field. You can't stop of us. Why? Because we the ones.
Yes.
That's supposed to be here to put this thing together.
Right.
They the ones that came and took from us. They came and took it from us. This is ours.
Yes.
We need to take it back.
We need to take it back.
We really do. Because it's just unbelievable how they sit there and they try to just keep us underfoot. I mean, I even look at the politics. You know, we've got our first Black president.
Yes.
And I don't care if the man is waking up just like now, the sunshine. He said it's sunshine. They're going to say it's not. Why? Just because he's Black.
Just
no other reason. No other reason. Just to keep their foot on your neck.
Just to keep you down.
I mean, I'm not even, you know, I'm not Republican. Okay.
Yes.
But I'm looking at this thing even with Kane.
Yes.
This Black man was on the top.
Yes.
And these white folks got pissed off.
Yes.
What did they do? Even whether this stuff is true or not.
Yes.
They just brought it up to try to pull him back down.
Simple as that.
That's all it is. Doesn't even make sense.
What do you think as far as the way the civil rights movement moved us forward? Mm-hmm. When you look at then... Mm-hmm. And look at now, the America we live in now. What do you think is the biggest, the biggest issue facing us as African Americans?
Sometimes we're our own worst enemy. Because, you know, it's I look at a lot of different ethnic groups of people.
Yes.
And they seem like they work with each other, they band together. But for some reason, I think it's because of where we have come from and what has been taken from us and what has been instilled in us here. We don't band together and we don't support each other. And if we did more of that, I think we could be a lot further than we are. But we want to seem like cut each other's throat because that's what's been given to us. And we don't know it. You know, we have to start thinking from a different thinking pattern, because as long as you're thinking like this, we're never going to progress.
Mm.
Yeah, we've progressed some.
Yes.
We've got so far to go.
Yes.
So far to go. I mean, you know, you see your younger people out here, they're so disrespectful. Because no one is teaching them at home. That's where it starts. They have to have that foundation. If they don't have that,
right.
This is what you get.
Yes.
And what we get is what? Pants on the ground.
Mm.
I'm so tired looking at behind.
Oh.
I don't know what to do.
Mm.
I know every kind of underwear got out here.
I don't have to look at my closet.
But you know, it's saying it's just that we need, as a people, we need to try to get more unity amongst us.
Yes.
You know, and stop trying to cut each other's throat. You know, it's all we're always trying to outdo one another. That's what another thing when they put the the uniforms in the schools.
Yes.
I like that because it's not, we all dress the same.
Yes.
So we're all here for the same reason.
Yes.
I'm not worried about, oh, you got on Baby Fat, you got on Rocco Wear, you got on Fat Farmer. You know what I'm saying? Your jeans are better than mine, or my shoes cost more than yours. It's none of that. We're all in the same thing here. So you can put your mind on more positive things and not worry about all that superficial mess.
All that superficiality.
Because we need to get our young people together, because I'm very frightened when I look around and know what I see out here is what's going to have to take care of me.
Mm.
That's not a good feeling.
That's not a good feeling.
That's not a good feeling at all. You know, it used to be a time when people would be respectful of your seniors.
Yes.
And not say certain things. These children nowadays, they don't care what they say.
Mm.
They call you out of name.
Mm. Without biting their tongue.
You know, if they're standing there and they're being disrespectful and you look at them or try to say something to them, they'll curse you out. They'll curse you out in the blink of an eye. And I'm not understanding that because they're not getting what they need to be getting foundation-wise. And as long as we are not on that path, I'm telling you, whatever progress we've made thus far, it's going to be going down the hill the other way. Because we've got nobody there that's going
to grab it and
take it where
take it to the next level.
That's right.
You answered a question that I was going to ask about the generation.
Mm-hmm.
My question to you then, how do we realize where we are? What you have said is, I mean, it's point on with me because I feel the same way.
Right.
But we can look at that and we can accept that, or we can look at that and we can prescribe something. We can find a way to reach this generation. What is it, or the next generation, what is it that we need to do in your opinion?
Well, my thing is I never give up. Okay, and if you take a step, you reach back and you pull one with you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If you take two steps, you reach back and you pull two with you. You have to be able to do that. Just like, I'm going to give you a for instance. Sometimes you have to step up out of your 360 to step into someone else's. I was in here one day and my son was standing in the kitchen and this little boy was out there and throwing rocks at my truck.
Okay.
There was a bunch of children out there. And so I hollered out the window and I went downstairs and I found out where they came from. So the one that was throwing the rocks was visiting his aunt over here. So I walked over and the aunt came to the window. So she's talking to me out the window. First wrong move, she sends her teenage son downstairs to talk to me. So then she gets his mother, which was her sister, on the phone, the little boy that was throwing the rocks. So the young man gets her on the phone and I explained to her what he was doing. Her response to me, well, what you want me to do about it?
What?
So I looked at the phone.
Wow.
And I handed the phone back to the young man. And
yes.
I said, that's okay. Because see, at that point, I knew what I was dealing with. And see, a lot of times, that's what these kids that are out here, that's what they leave at home.
Yes.
So what I did, I walked over to the group of kids. And I went to mama, grandmama mode.
Yes.
And I explained to them about throwing rocks and how you could hurt your friend and blind them or anything. So now, I guarantee you, none of them will ever throw a rock at my car. And when I pull in, they're coming telling me how they did in school, and they got an A on their paper. And the whole response is different.
Yes.
Because I just took those few minutes. So if each and every one of us just takes
a few minutes,
you might not get them all in the group, but you might hit one.
Hey, and that one
and
counts.
That one might just count, because you never can tell who that one might influence. Just hitting that one might influence the rest of that group.
Exactly.
So in essence, you influence them indirectly. Doesn't matter if it's directly or indirectly, as long as you're there. So it doesn't matter. Just take up the time, because a lot of these kids, they just need someone to care. My daughter and I were over at West End. We were sitting there in the parking lot talking. We had met over there. And there's this group that passed us. It was two young men and two young girls. And they walked past us, and the young men's pants was
exactly
on
they was, yes, most certainly.
So my daughter said, "Excuse me, can you come here for a minute?" And the young men came back. And she told me, she says, "You know, gentlemen really don't wear their pants like, and I'm sure that your mother has probably raised you to be a gentleman. So why don't you pull those up?"
Wow.
And they looked at each other and said, "Yes, ma'am." They pulled those pants up. So they were walking, and as far as we could see them, which was all the way down the block, you never did see their pants drop again. Because someone just took the initiative to tell them that they cared about them.
As simple as that.
As so much of that missing out here.
It's
so
much of it
missing. And so if you just take a few minutes, sometimes you might get blessed out.
That's true. That is true.
Sometimes they might tell you anything.
Anything, right.
But that's okay. That's okay. With what we have gone through.
Yes.
And what we have endured.
Yes.
For them to tell you, say, to bless you out or not do it, that doesn't mean anything. We done went through more hell than that.
That's right.
To get where we are today. So it doesn't matter. You keep trying, and you keep trying to pull them. Because if somebody takes the initiative, you might reach them.
You might reach them. You
I'm
might
not
reach
up.
Them. I'm not giving up either.
I'm not giving
and
up.
And inspired, because your story, it's about life, and it's real.
Yeah.
I'm thinking as you're talking.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think
uh-huh.
we need another Martin Luther King Jr.?
Well, my thing is this. People cannot be replaced. We can't have another Martin Luther King Jr. We had Martin Luther King Jr. That was it.
Okay.
Just like we can't have another Michael Jackson.
Right.
We have Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Okay. Now, there are other people that could come and maybe be influential in certain ways, but they could never take another person's place. They could never stand in Martin's shoes. They
yes.
could never stand in Coretta's shoes.
Yes.
They could never stand in Michael's shoes. They can't stand in anybody's shoes. They got to stand in their own shoes. So whatever they bring to the table, we ready for it. If you got something real positive to bring, but know that you're going to be met with resistance. Because anybody that's bringing anything that's got to do with us,
yes,
them folks over there are going to have a field day, and they're going to try whatever
they can
to keep you. I mean, if it's even their own. You see, like I said with Cain, it's his own people that's cutting his throat.
Yes.
Not us.
That's right.
There's not no Democrat in there that's doing that. This is all Republican people that's doing that to you.
Right.
So know that you're gonna have a fight.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to have a good backbone when you come. Because I'm gonna tell you, that's what Martin had.
Yes.
He had that backbone, that stride, baby. He wasn't letting nothing. No. I will die standing here to make my point. And that's exactly what he did.
Yes.
Okay, and if you think back, that's the same thing that the man upstairs did. So
yes.
when you come, baby, you better come right.
You better come
because
right.
Because I'm going to tell you something, it ain't going to be an easy fight.
It's not going to be easy.
And it's going to be a whole lot of people that's not going to be with you.
That's right.
So know that. Know that going in. But you got to, just like when I'm talking to the groups, to the kids and stuff out there, I know that it might not be received.
Yes.
You got some out there that's... Who is that old lady? What's she talking about? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter, because I'm going to keep on talking.
Yes.
Because one day I might say that one thing that might get to you. Might turn your life
might
around.
Wow.
You never know.
You never know.
But I never stop.
That, I see. That is evident. And you know, you have that spirit.
Yeah, yeah.
You have that spirit.
I can't stop. I got 20 grands and 4 great grands.
Ooh-wee.
I cannot stop.
How? You don't have time to stop.
I don't have time to stop.
You don't have time to stop.
No, but to help my kids stop. I don't need any more.
That's enough. That's a perfect
good number.
Right there's enough dollars. Let me ask you this. I want to talk a little bit about dancing.
Okay.
Because you just love it.
Yes.
And when you are on stage, it is evident.
Yes.
So tell me when you started dancing.
I started dancing when I was about 6 years old. I started with ballet in elementary school. And then I switched to modern dance in junior high and in high school.
Yes.
Scholarship to college for my modern dance.
Wow.
I did summer with Alvin Ailey. And I've danced with Mary Grove College Dance Company at home. And in fact, the co-founder of Balletnik here,
yes,
Waverly and I, because Waverly's from Detroit also, and we both danced with Mary Grove College Dance Company, not knowing each other at the time, but we both had the same African dance instructor.
Okay.
But we weren't in the same class. Right.
Okay.
But I remember at home hearing Balletnik, and then I didn't hear it anymore. That's when Waverly had first mentioned that's what he was going to do. And when I moved here,
wow,
there it was.
And the connection.
Yes. And then our dance company, Adeli Egba, which means the elders have gathered with completion. It comes from northern Nigeria, from the Hausa people. Ideli Egba.
Ideli Egba.
Ideli Egba.
Yes.
The elders have gathered with completion.
With completion.
Yes. So we always dance with Balletnik for Urban Nutcracker in November and for whatever their production is in March. In the springtime, which this coming is going to be Jazzy Sleeping Beauty again.
So, wow.
So we'll be performing with them again.
Again.
Yes.
I know, look at you.
but I have danced all my life. And to me, it's like a breath of air. If I don't dance, I don't feel like I'm alive. I feel like I'm breathing. And I do all types of dance.
Right.
Yeah. So.
What is your favorite dance that you do?
Well, that's kind of hard because I love all of them so much. I love all of them so much because I do ballroom dancing. I do Detroit ballroom. I've tried to learn Chicago stepping, but every time they turn me, I fall back into ballroom.
Okay, so
I haven't danced with that one yet.
Right, right.
And I do the tap dance, do belly dance, I do African dance, and we do spiritual dance.
Yes,
so
yes.
So out of all of those, I really think I guess I could say tap and African, because when I do African dance, those drums do something to me.
Okay.
Okay, and it's just like something that's almost uncontrollable because it's like I almost have like an out of body experience. I say,
yes.
I know I must be from there.
Because
it just comes through.
Yes.
And even Rufus, when the drums do the same thing to him, because I'll notice him when we're in rehearsal, he's okay. But when we're performing and we got those drums, we got the drummers there.
The actual drums.
The actual drummers,
yes,
that are drumming. We talking about live drums. I can see him clear the floor higher than Teresa Stans. I've seen him do it. He
wow.
did it with Spellman 2 or 3 times that night when we were out there in the atrium, when we were out there dancing.
Okay.
Yeah. I looked up and Teresa was dancing with him. He jumped up off the floor.
Wow.
And cleared him. Teresa looked at me. I'm like, hey. I said, far as I know, he must be auditioning for a solo. I said, because I know you're going to get him. I know you're going to get him. Because it's just wonderful. But the drums do something to
yes.
me. And I just love the African dance.
Yes.
You know, and then I love the tap, I guess, because all my life, I've always wanted to tap.
Hmm.
And so now I've been tapping like for I think we're going on to 3 years, maybe.
Okay.
Going into 3 years. 2 years, 3 years, somewhere in there.
Okay.
And so that is, I'm having so much fun because that is more of a challenge to me.
Yes.
That
yes.
is.
Yes.
Than the other dances. Because I've done the other dances so much in my life that it's almost like second nature.
Second nature. Okay.
The tap is more of a challenge, and I love it.
Yes. Yes.
I love a challenge.
Yes.
So when I put on those tap shoes, it's like, I got to make these feet work.
Yes.
So I think the one I love most
perfect.
Would be the African.
Yes.
But the challenge I love most is the tap.
Is the tap.
Yes.
Yes, is the tap.
As long as I'm dancing, I'm good.
As long as you dancing, keep it coming.
Yes, yes, yes. So I'm 62 because you know our dance group. I'm the baby of the dance group.
You are?
I am. I'm 62.
Okay. All right.
And the oldest person is 83.
Mm.
But I always say I'm 62.
62. I like the 62 because I will be adopting that when I hit 60. What is it?
Yeah.
60.
60.
I'll be 60.
I'm 60
until I get out of the 60s, and then you got to give me the new word for 70. Because I'll adopt that as well.
Okay. I'm about to think of one between now and then.
Oh, you will. I'm looking
and
forward,
you know,
and I know this.
And you know it. Yes.
Now, what about
this
generation?
Yes.
And what they call dance. What do you think about the way the young ladies and the young men and the things they do and grabbing themselves and the way they dance. What do you think about that? Okay.
Well, it has gotten to the point that some things that are supposed to be sacred,
yes.
some things that are supposed to have a lot of value, have ceased to have value.
Mm.
Whereas being intimate with your partner, being sexual, used to be something that was behind closed doors. Now it's like it's all over in your face.
Yes.
And what they're doing is taking and devaluing the relationship, the intimacy relationship between people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like all of this grabbing of the genitals and the
yes.
jumping up and down.
Yes.
I mean, it's like,
really?
Why?
Yes.
Why? Who's? But I want to know, where is it coming from?
Hmm.
Who's teaching or who's not teaching?
The better question.
Because I'm thinking that it's the latter, that no one's teaching. Because
yes.
if someone is
yes.
taking about 5 minutes to teach them something, they would not be devaluing themselves
yes.
the way that they do.
The way that they do.
Because that to me is disgraceful.
Mm.
I don't like it. It's disgusting.
Yes, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
Uh-uh.
I was wondering what you thought about, how would I say this, having dance.
Mm-hmm.
And having this real dance,
uh-huh.
the, you know, the tap,
uh-huh.
the ballet,
uh-huh.
the African dance, the ballroom dance, the salsa, you know, the real dance.
Uh-huh.
A program that was put into the public school systems and exposed inner city youth. What do you think about something like that?
Well, I'm going to tell you, that's where I got mine from. That's where I started, because my dance and everything came from being from Detroit Public Schools. That's
really?
Where my scholarship came from. I started with my ballet in elementary. That was being taught in the school. When I went to junior high into high school, modern dance, that was being taught in the school.
Really?
Yeah, we had, you know, different people. Well, we had the regular modern dance teacher, you had
yes.
the regular ballet teacher that was there. I mean, those things were in schools. These things have been taken out of
the curriculum.
Yes.
Mm.
And I can tell you, a lot of the art has
yes,
been taken out.
That is
out.
True. That
because,
is true.
And that is what people that you need, because you need that as much as you need your math, your English, you know, all of the rest of that. You need that because your body develops not just in your brain, but your whole system. It has to develop from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. And dance is not just only physical. Dance has to do here. You have to think about what you're doing. Your mind works constantly.
Yes.
Okay? And your body. You start constantly moving your body. It's exercising. You're steadily building and rebuilding it. They've taken that away from the children. I don't even see recess anymore in schools. You know, you used to pass the school almost all day long. You would see some class out there on the field somewhere. You don't even see that anymore. When they want to cut back on the schools, the first thing they want to cut back on the arts. That's what's making the, that's it gives you a venue. Yes. There's a lot of people that have a lot of things built up in them, and they can go in there and hit that dance floor or go in there and play that instrument, and it takes it up and out. It doesn't store it within, because then it comes out in ugly ways. So you're depriving so many people of so many things, so many arts, so much happiness they could give someone else.
Mm.
Because when we hit that stage, you'd be surprised of what we do for a person's day. Just for that minute, it takes them to another whole level.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Because when I know how it is when I'm sitting there and I'm receiving. So when I hit that stage, I want to give somebody, who's ever there receiving, I want to give them what they're supposed to get. Because they're coming there to get something, and we need to give it to them. Okay?
Yes.
So when it comes to that dance, man, listen. It comes to that art, music, all of that. Don't take that away from the kids. Don't take that away from a developing mind. You don't do that. Mm. There's so much within that brings out.
Yes.
You're depriving. You're defeating the whole purpose of even having them in a school.
Yes.
If you're taking that away from them.
If you're taking it away from them. So, just from that conversation, now, you have four children?
I do.
And, okay, four children, and you have how many sons and how many daughters?
I have one daughter. That's my oldest. She's 44.
Okay.
And my sons are 43, 36, and 32.
Mm-hmm. What type of dance were they involved in?
They were mostly involved in, my daughter was in modern dance.
Okay.
She danced like I did. My sons weren't in dance, but they were in sports.
In sports. Yes, there was an outlet. Yes, there was an outlet.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And so your daughter chose the modern dance as what she enjoyed the most.
Uh-huh. And also, too, we were all in band. I was in band because I played violin, viola, clarinet, cornet, and trumpet.
Okay.
I took 5 years of conservatory of music for my piano.
Wow.
And my other instruments was in school.
Was in school.
In school. Uh-huh. And all my sons have played musical instruments also, along with the sports.
With the sports.
Yeah.
With
and all of these things were available for them. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I'm really upset at the way that the school system has developed, where they're taking all of these things away from the kids. You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense.
None.
If you had the opportunity and had the stage where you could speak to this generation, and considering everything we've spoken about, what would you say to this generation?
So much, because I would tell them that they can't go by what the next person is doing. You have to get your head on straight. You have to find out what you want in life, and you don't let anything deter you. You know, you have to weigh. Do you want? It's a lot of fast money out here. You see a lot of people out here making fast money, got big money, doing illegal things, just like easy come, easy go.
Yes.
Because when something happens and the thing goes down wrong, then they're gone.
Then they're gone.
Is that what you want for your life? No. You have to think about and make some good, honest decisions. Look at yourself in the mirror to really find out who you are. Mm. And sometimes that's not an easy thing, to really be honest with oneself as to what they really see looking back at them out that mirror.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you, to go against the grain is not the easiest thing, because it's, a lot of times you lose a lot of friends along the way because people don't understand when you're trying to progress or you're trying to do something positive. But you have to find it in yourself. Sometimes you might be alone in that struggle.
Yes.
But in the end, that's when it all pays off. But you have to keep your head on straight. Know that you have to move in a positive direction. Please, please put God in your life. Mm. If you don't have Him in your life, you need to go and get Him, because without that guidance, you're not going to go down the right path. Do unto others as you want them to do unto you. Don't, you know, if you don't want to be taken advantage of, then don't do that to someone else.
Yes.
If you don't want your feelings or things to be hurt, then don't do that to someone else. You got to think about what you do before you do it. You got to.
That's true.
You know, so.
That's true.
My last question.
Get your education.
Get your education.
Yes.
You got to get your education.
Got to get your education.
Don't let anything get in your way. It's too many programs and things out here. Mm. If you don't have the monies, it's too many opportunities. Just dig a little bit deeper.
Yes.
And you can find it. But don't just give up because it's not sitting you in the face, because anything that's worth getting, maybe you're going to have to get out there and work.
You're going to have to work
for
it. It's
not going to be handed to you on a silver platter.
There are no silver platters in our world.
None.
This is going to be my last question. Do you believe in your heart that this generation can stand up and make an impact, make a change, take us to a different place?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I want to believe that. I believe that there are enough people moving in a positive direction that will be able to. I'm just hoping they will have the backing from the other ones that's just sitting on it behind and not doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. Because you can't pull the weight by yourself. And it's hard to pull this way if you got dead weight sitting there.
Yes.
Okay. So somebody got to get up off their behind. We got to get it moving. I don't know what it's going to take. But only thing I can say, we just got to keep trying, because somebody is going to be able to find something that's going to be able to make a difference. But we can't give up. We got to keep
trying. We have to keep trying.
We got to keep trying. Whatever you think it might not be, try it anyway.
That's right.
You never know. It just might work.
It might work.
You got to turn over every stone, because you don't know which one is up under.
Mm. Well, that ends our time together.
Okay.
And when I tell you, that has been a moving experience, and it has enhanced me just to talk to you, you know, to understand your story. And I thank you for sharing your story with us.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Okay.